Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
My name is Matt Marinovich, and for the new season of Murder Homes, I've found homes whose stories are just a little bit darker. We'll talk to a prisoner convicted of first-degree murder, follow a crime scene cleanup crew to a horrific tragedy, take a road trip to a bucolic summer camp in upstate New York, where a preacher buried the bodies of his adoring disciples, and bring you face-to-face with one of the most unlikely killers of all. You can get 100% ad-free exclusive bonus content, including access to early episodes of Murder Homes, by subscribing to the iHeart True Crime Plus channel today. Available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. Listen to Murder Homes Season 2 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
Mike, let's talk about proof, about evidence. You're a journalist. You know how important that is, especially on something that's as tough for a lot of people to swallow as UFOs, UAPs, consciousness, life after death. You know, you look at cases like Tic Tac, Gimbal, Go Fast. There is evidence if people are inclined to look at it. There's the eyewitness testimony, the pilots. There's a video. There's sensor data that's pretty compelling. Those are some really well-documented cases. If you want to be enough of a debunker or a skeptic to dismiss that, so be it. I mean, there's never going to be enough evidence to convince someone, even of UFOs, let alone something as strange and undocumentable as alien abductions, where people say they're taken on board these craft, they have these missing time experiences, often have very little in the way of physical evidence to go along with it. What do you say to your colleagues, to your family members, or to your editors who say, what's the proof for all this stuff?
Well, you know, it's hard because, you know, like you said, as journalists, we always try to get all the, as many facts as we can, right? But with this topic, it really doesn't lend it to us that easily. You know, obviously, like you said, you know, you referenced the Tic Tac and the Nimitz and the radar data they have, the video evidence, the professional testimonial evidence, like that to many is quote unquote proof. That's enough for the New York Times to stake their reputation to run that. It's enough for Washington Post and CNN to kind of follow suit. So that's proof in some sorts, but for us as journalists, a lot of times it's, you know, we're telling the story and it's up for the audience to decide, you know, whether they believe it or not. And that's something, you know, I think with our topic, that's the best we can do is try to, you know, find these people and see if they're credible to begin with, tell their story, and then it's up for the audience to decide. That's something I try to do even this day with the website punkrockandufos.com with the stories I do. You know, I try to do that as well. And even in my book, you know, some of the stuff I put in there, the stuff that, you know, at first I was like, well, you know, some of this is kind of out there, and even though I vetted some of these people, but it should be up for the reader to decide, you know, let them make an informed decision on their own.
Yeah, I get really uncomfortable when people ask me, well, what do you believe? Do you believe this is true? Do you believe in UFOs? Of course, I don't believe in it. It's not my religion. It's not a belief. It's a news story for me. You know, I believe there is a good news story there, and it's something that probably involves things that we should all be aware of and think about, but it's not a belief system. You're trying to follow a trail of breadcrumbs to figure something out. And I'm sure you feel the same way and probably get asked the same thing all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, you know, for us, I feel like that trail of breadcrumbs just keeps getting bigger and bigger. You know, just when you think, you know it all, or you're zeroing in on it, it kind of takes another turn. But I think that's part of the journey, you know, is just kind of just learning more and just seeing where it goes, because none of us have the answers, and I don't think any of us are going to find the answers overnight. But it's like, if you look at, you know, just through years of UFO research, how far we've gone, and potentially where it could go next, I think it's a very exciting time that we're in.
If you have to explain, too, that the truth is elusive, that proof and evidence is elusive, because the phenomena is intelligent. It doesn't necessarily want to serve up understanding on a silver platter. It wants us to work at it. At least that's my sense of it, to try to figure things out. There's people that don't want to accept that. They just wave their hand and walk away when you tell them that kind of stuff. But it does. That's the way it works out. I mean, I'm thinking of Skinwalker Ranch, which you cover in your book, Stranger Than Fiction. You get into it, how weird that place is and how elusive the phenomena can be at times.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've experienced it, you know, firsthand with your book, which is one of my favorites, that you did with the Hunt the Skinwalker. And one of the scientists I interviewed was Travis Taylor, who was on the show as well. And, you know, he was the lead scientist on there. And he came in wanting to do real hard science. And he saw it play out on the show. And I was thoroughly impressed that a lot of it wasn't just for TV. You know, they did do a lot of science on television. But he came in, you know, and a lot of people didn't know this until I interviewed him. But, you know, he's a science fiction writer, too. So he's already is into this stuff. So, but him as a scientist wants to then try to prove it and see what's possible. Because a lot of, like, you know, science fiction is just, you know, imagining what is possible. And then and sometimes, you know, that science fiction becomes a reality with, you know, in the future with technological advances as well. So I think it was fascinating, you know, that he was the lead scientist on the case. And he came in, even with the science fiction background as well. But, you know, he wanted to come in and do hard science. And he wasn't able to get the results because this phenomenon, whatever it was intelligent, would just not allow it to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you tell somebody that going into it, they don't want to believe it. They don't believe it. I can tell you from personal experience, they reject that that premise. But in fact, whatever it is that's there is intelligent, and it's elusive, and it plays games with you. It's a trickster, and it seems to know what people are going to do before people do it. It messes with equipment. It drains batteries. It breaks cameras. It does all kinds of things in a physical realm and then in a non-physical realm. And if you're not ready to follow the evidence or lack thereof where it leads, you're not going to get anywhere. I respect Travis Taylor for admitting that, because it's the same thing that happened to Bigelow's team, both the NIDS team and then the OSAP investigators who were part of the DIA study. They're there for years. They experience these things themselves, and they find out that this thing is always one step ahead of them. Hard to tell someone that that is true, but in fact, that is what happened. And Travis Taylor not only experienced that for himself, but he had physical effects from his time on the ranch. I did not know he was a sci-fi writer, but it occurred to me as I read that in your book that I wonder if that will hurt his credibility the same way it hurt Whitley Strieber. He's a novelist. He wrote The Wolf, and he must have made this whole thing up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's one of the points of my book. I really wanted to make clear that there is an intersect in between fiction and nonfiction, right? And a lot of people always look at it from this perspective of, oh, it's, you know, they're just trying to blur the lines. But the lines have been blurred throughout time. It just, you know, when you put that blurring the lines, it's almost like a negative connotation. But fiction and nonfiction have been intercepting and borrowing with each other forever. And that was one of the goals of the book, is to kind of really pinpoint, you know, certain pop culture franchises and characters and try to tie it to potentially a real origin or a real case. You know, I bring up Stranger Things because that's a huge show. Kids love it. So if a kid picks up my book and reads it, it says, oh, I love Stranger Things, and they say, oh, wow, Montauk's an actual real place, and, you know, these studies apparently really existed. So then maybe that kid will want to, you know, explore that on their own then. Or even, you know, I'm a big comic book guy, and a lot of the mythos of comic book characters are all kind of based in this, this mythology in itself. So to me, it's, you know, I really wanted to the readers to make those connections too. Like, I didn't list every character or every story because, you know, predominantly I wanted, you know, some of the reader to kind of make that on their own. Like, this summer, my wife and I, we rewatched all the Marvel movies. And when I was rewatching, I was like, oh, man, I totally could have put that in my book. But at the same time, I was like, you know what? I think that's good that I left out some things, or I forgot to put in some things, because that's up for the readers then to fill in those blanks.
Well, you make comparisons too that are you might end up with a flaming cross on your lawn some night. But I mean, of Superman and superheroes from comic books and biblical figures, the comparisons between them, and then tie it together with UFO lore as well.
Yeah, and that's one of the one of the things I really like to talk about is, you know, the idea of Superman as this, you know, this godlike alien being. If he existed, how would he be treated? And I think Zack Snyder did a really good job of portraying that in Batman vs. Superman and potentially in his next Justice League film coming out, the Snyder Cut. I mean, it's true, though. If Superman existed in a real world, how would he be viewed? Basically the same way that Jesus was viewed. They killed him. And I definitely see parallels in that, you know, what we see nowadays with how people are treated in general, people who are different as well. And, you know, one of the things that I was able to really explore was this idea of tying together, you know, all these commonalities I saw. You know, Superman wears this S on his chest, and it's in an upside-down triangle. And in the comics, that S stands, I mean, in the movies, it stands for hope. But that upside-down triangle is on his chest. And if you know, a lot of people have had UFO abduction experiences have always said that they've seen an alien with a triangle on their chest. And what does a triangle represent? You know, in religion, it potentially represents this idea of a trinity. You know, you have man, Holy Spirit, and God. And in DC Comics, you have Trinity, which is Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman. So you have Batman, man. You have Superman, technically, you know, the Holy Spirit, and then Wonder Woman's like a godlike figure. So you see all these, you know, all these commonalities just kind of cross through all different elements of pop culture, mythology, and religion. And there's, you know, you could draw so many connections.
Let's talk about your sighting, because we kind of breezed right over that. What did you see? What was the experience? Was it beyond just seeing something in the sky? Anything else?
It was the traditional orbs, orbs moving in a crazy way, and then just, you know, darting out of sight. But it's funny because, you know, to me, I always thought this was such a rare thing until I saw it myself. And even a couple years ago, I was in Chicago with my wife, and we were on a boat tour, and they said they saw something. And at first, I thought they were messing with me. So the first thing I did, you know, I took out my journalist hat, and I started interviewing other people on the boat, and other people saw it too.
Oh, you must have been Mr. Popularity on the boat then.
Yeah, so I wrote a story about it, and then next thing you know, a few months later, somebody emailed me saying, "Hey, I just read your story. I was on a flight from Michigan flying that night, and I saw the same sighting from my airplane." So it's crazy how, you know, how really common these, you know, these sightings really are. And it's, you know, you feel special when you see it, but, you know, so many people have these sightings. Like for me, I'm a teacher, and I did a seminar on UFOs for my colleagues last year. I had people come forward saying, "Oh, I've seen stuff before." And I had one of them who actually came by afterwards and said, "Hey, you know, I've had experiences, like not just sightings, you know," but she was terrified to tell people. And, you know, if it takes, you know, myself or, you know, anyone else, you know, speaking about this freely to then empower somebody to kind of come forward with their sightings, I think that's great.
Yeah, and the numbers, I mean, it's hard to really get a solid estimate on how many people have had these experiences because so many won't say it. Now, you had a colleague come forward and tell you about it. There's probably other colleagues that you had that had experiences that didn't come and tell you about it, but they've shared it with their families. It's same is true in government and in the military. You know, if you have, I know you've had conversations with the TTSA guys, and they will tell you from their time on the inside, there are people in high levels at the Pentagon and government who've had these experiences who would not dream of ever telling anybody about it or putting it on the record, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I think the ones who are coming out, I think that shows their bravery. But not only that, I think it's just they understand the importance of it. You know, these are people willing to risk their careers and to kind of get this out there. So I think it's fascinating, too, how, you know, some of them had NDAs, some of them didn't. So it's always like maybe somebody's pushing, you know, for this to get out there. But, you know, I think for us, who's been studying this stuff for a long time, you know, we all along we've kind of knew that there's been secret UFO programs. But I think it's awesome now that there's been official confirmation, whereas, you know, the common populace knows now, too.
You had a sighting, and were there any residual effects, anything else that sort of manifested itself in your life, anything that could or could not be related to that experience?
No, but, you know, it's weird. Like, you know, you read stuff, you read other people's stories. Like, you know, I read all of Whitley Strieber's books and how he's able to kind of look back in his past and pinpoint something and think, oh, what was that related? And I had this weird moment. I was going through just some old, you know, I used to draw comic books as a kid, and I used to write my own, like, books, just, you know, playing around. And I found a literary magazine that I was published in. And what I did is I wrote a little comic strip about an alien abduction. And it was weird to me because I was like, I wasn't even into this stuff then. Like, how did I even come up with this? So it's like, I'm not saying like, oh, maybe I've been abducted, but it's like, it just, I just thought it was funny that, you know, at that young age, I wrote this little alien abduction story with, from what I recall, very limited exposure to the topic, maybe outside of like a comic book or something.
Well, you know, Superman is an alien, right? He is an alien, so it fits. In writing about aliens and what we perceive to be aliens, you explore some possible explanations that people maybe haven't thought about, them as emissaries or messengers, or maybe them as us. Share sort of the scope of what the options are.
Well, I think, you know, we always hear that, you know, they kind of move almost like more mechanical than biological. So people think, oh, well, could they be robots? Could they be us from the future? But then you also hear, you know, there's various different species and races. So it's like, well, which ones are closest to us? Where do they come from? And one of the things I theorize is, you know, because a lot of people have these experiences, they always describe it as angelic, you know, and you hear, you know, before there was, we knew what, quote unquote, what aliens were, you know, you hear it, Sumerian texts and biblical pastors as well as those beings from the sky coming down. And, you know, in a weird perverted sense, could they be angels? You know, almost, if you think almost the way they watch over us, you would think almost like a guardian angel as well. So it's like, you know, there's just so many theories out there, and it's like, it's hard to discredit, you know, any of them, because I think they all have some weight to argue. You know, are aliens from other planets? Are they biological? Are they us? Are they from the future? Are they, you know, are they consciousness? Like, there's just so many various avenues to go down. There's like so many rabbit holes to go down, but I don't think we should dismiss any of them. I think, you know, look into all of them.
Yeah, I mean, I remember about the ranch, you know, the program being killed, the DIA program, the money was pulled because some people at the Pentagon thought it was satanic, it was evil, there were demons out there. I guess if you can say it might be angels, it could also maybe be demons. And I would have been inclined to sort of scoff at that, but I don't know. I have to admit, I really don't know what's going on out there, what the intelligence is, and neither does anyone else. You know, you had, you mentioned in your book that, about these old cave drawings, the oldest cave art, I think, in history, shows sort of a shapeshifter, monsters that change their shape, right?
Yeah, it's almost looks like what we would know in Greek mythology is like a minotaur, or, you know, one of those half-man, half-beast creatures. It's like, it's interesting to me that, you know, that's what they choose to draw. Just like some of the early, you know, Sumerian texts, you know, they were recording history. They weren't wasting those tablets on fiction. So it's like people reporting what they were seeing. So it's always fascinating what you see on cave drawings. And what you see in, you know, in the Egyptian pyramids. Like, it's very deliberate.
This idea of machine intelligence, I had mentioned it in reference to a story that we posted on the Coast website about this new paper that some astrophysicists and astrobiologists have speculated what life on other planets could be like. And they theorize it could be a machine intelligence, that biological entities evolve into machines. And that sounds hard to believe, except we're doing it right now. We're basically becoming cyborgs. And if or when Ray Kurzweil's prediction about the singularity comes true, the idea would be that we can achieve immortality, basically, by uploading our consciousness to a computer. And then whatever physical tasks we need to get done, we can build robots to put our brains into it. And I know it's a trope of sci-fi, but we're not that far off from being able to accomplish some of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the tropes of science fiction in the 60s and 50s are now reality. You know, like, you watch Black Mirror, and you know, they talk about implanting consciousness into, you know, computers, and it's like, are they really that far off, you know, doing a show about that, a fictionalized show? No, they're really not.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine. Hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.